How's everybody doing? You guys doing all right? Well, here's the deal. You guys are probably wondering why I'm dressed like this. Well, I just found out this scary statistic today. I found out that everyone who's born eventually dies, and it kind of freaked me out. And so, I thought what I should probably do from now on is just start taking some proper precautions. I realize I don't really do that enough, and here's the thing. It's in life, you got to be careful. I mean, have you guys ever gotten attacked when you just didn't know it was coming? You know, I mean, attacks can come from anywhere at any time. Oh gosh! Oh! What's happening to me? Oh my goodness! Oh wow! Oh man, you're a sniper with that thing. Oh, watch out for that guy. Jeez. Wow. That was great. See, now you guys know why I take these precautions. I got my first aid kit. I got my umbrella, which I believe saved me from being fully teepeed. I don't know. I got partially teepeed. I got my knee pads down here, just in case I fall. You can't be too careful. I got my work gloves just in case, because I don't want to get any calluses. You know, those really hurt. You guys ever gotten a blister before? Man, I hate those things. They hurt, right? And you guys noticed my orange vest? You like it, don't you? I saw you guys. You guys were all like, man, where did Kevin get that vest? That's amazing. I got my sword. And if I had been paying attention, I would have fought off the my attackers there, the snipers. And I got my goggles here just to, and it was a good thing because I didn't know I was going to get shot at tonight by my leaders. My trusty umbrella, my helmet, I believe saved my head tonight. I'm very thankful for that. So, as you can tell, there's a lot of, measures that people take to protect themselves. Would you agree? How many of you guys own something that I was just wearing? An umbrella, some knee pads, a helmet, a sword. Okay. You own all of it. That's creepy. You can go to a lot. You can go very far trying to protect yourself, as I just did. And, you can take it pretty far. And here's the thing. You can never fully protect yourself from what may happen. You never know what's going to happen. You don't know when velocity leaders are going to try to snipe you, you know, or TP you, or even on a more serious note, you don't know when a spiritual attack is going to happen. And the thing with life is that a lot of times people get so worked up trying to protect themselves that they go a little too far. Have you guys ever met somebody who's just paranoid? Like something's going to happen to them at every point of the day, right? And they're always looking over their shoulders or something. Now, safety is smart. Don't get me wrong. Taking caution, that's very smart. But some people go way too far. And you can play the what if game all the time. Like, well, what if this happens? And what if this happens? And what if, and you get really worked up if you start doing that. And you're worried. And you're wondering what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. But to have fun, you got to take some risks, right? I mean, that just kind of comes with it. Check out some pictures. You got to take some risks, right? And so here's the thing. When it comes to life, a lot of times you can't always protect yourself. Now, of course, you can avoid jumping over cars on a motorcycle or standing on a motorcycle or driving a car on two wheels and then jumping from car to car while dressed like Spider-Man. You can avoid those things. But there are certain things in life that you can't avoid, right? And sometimes when it comes to serving God, you got to take some risks. Because some Christians, maybe even in this room tonight, are a little too cautious when it comes to serving God. It's really easy to get caught up thinking that God is smaller than he really is. And you can find yourself doubting and wondering if God can really pull off what he said he's going to do. You can find yourself there because you're just being cautious. But you can find yourself in a place of questioning and doubting. And here's what we're going to look at tonight. That caution can go too far and it can cloud your vision. It can take you to a point where you can't see clearly the plan that God has for you. Turn in your Bibles to John chapter 1 if you haven't already. We're continuing our study through the lives of the 12 disciples. We're on disciple number 5 tonight, named Philip. And we're going to turn to a few different passages in John, but we're going to start in John chapter 1. Now, what we're going to see tonight is that having faith in God's plan involves taking risk. Risk is inevitable when it comes to serving God. There's something on the line. There's something on the line when it comes to serving the Lord. Hebrews 11:6 says this, "For without faith, it is impossible to please God." How possible is it to please God without faith? Impossible. You cannot please God if you don't trust in Him. You have to have faith. 2 Corinthians 5:7 says, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." But that's really hard sometimes. Because as humans, we always want to see what's on the horizon. We don't want to have to trust somebody. We want to know. We want to see it. We want to touch it. We want to know all about it. But sometimes that's a challenge. And faith is scary because it involves the unseen. It involves things that we don't always know. And I've heard it said that we should never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God. God is always in control. And no matter how uncertain your future may be, God always has it in His hands. Right? You guys sang the song when you were little kids, or maybe last night. I don't know. But God has the whole world in His hands, right? He's watching. He's in control. He knows. And so far, we've learned about some pretty interesting guys in our study through these 12 disciples. Peter, Andrew, James, John. We've learned about some guys who were pretty passionate. We've learned about some guys who were faithful at many times in their lives. Of course, there were times that they fell as well. You know, Peter, he walked on water. Jesus was walking on the water and he said, "Jesus, if that's you, call me out there." And he stepped out of the boat in the middle of a storm and he began to walk on top of the water, trusting in Jesus, and he walked toward Jesus. That is passion. Then we had Andrew, who introduced a bunch of people to Jesus. This guy loved Jesus so much he wanted everybody else to know about him. We learned about James and John, who had the nickname Sons of Thunder, right? Because they were so passionate about people loving Jesus that when a group of people, the Samaritans, rejected Jesus, remember what they wanted to do? Call down fire from heaven and burn them up. That's passion. Okay, now that's taking it a little too far. But these guys were passionate. And tonight, as we study Philip, you're going to see it's a little bit different. Because some would say this guy's a little too cautious. He's not a risk taker at all. He doesn't take risks. He calculates everything out. Some people say this guy was somewhat of a pessimist. And you know, he always kind of has a bad outlook on life. This guy, when you guys are hanging out with a guy like Philip, he's the first guy to say, "Oh, I don't think that's going to work. Nope, I already tried that. That's not going to work out. Doubt that'll happen." You guys know those people? Right? And it just seems like they're always trying to say that whatever you're trying to do isn't going to work. And a lot of people think that Philip may have been a bit that way. So here's the challenge for you guys tonight. As we look at the life of Philip, think about your life. Analyze it. Check out your life. Test yourself. Because many of us in this room tonight need to take further steps of faith. We need to trust God even more. We need to quit doubting God. You know, I heard from a few students that they didn't want to sign up for the South Dakota trip because the money. And I can understand that. Money's a big issue. But do you think God can't provide? Absolutely, God can provide. And He will provide if you'll trust Him. If you'll hang in there with Him. So Think about your life tonight and some areas that maybe you think you need to take some further steps to trust in the Lord. I'll bet there's some areas, and I want you to really be thinking about those tonight. Tonight, what we're going to do on the back of your bulletin, if you're following along, you'll see you can fill in the blanks, and we're going to look at three things that you should be looking past so you can focus on the plan that God has for your life and be able to really see God's power in your life. So the first one is look past the disapproval. In other words, don't let other people's opinions about what you believe bum you out, because it's really easy to do that. Look at John chapter 1, starting in verse 43. The following day, Jesus wanted to go to Galilee, and he found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Now we all like when people like us, right? It's human nature. We want to have friends. We want to be known. That's just kind of how it is. And there's a tendency to back down when somebody comes up against what you believe. When somebody doesn't like what you have to say or what you believe or the book, the Bible that you're reading. There's a tendency to back away from that. How many of you guys have ever tried to witness to somebody and you've been shot down by them? They didn't want to hear what you had to say. Okay, well, probably, if you didn't raise your hand, you probably haven't tried to witness to many people because it's part of it. You will experience, when you try to share your faith with people and your belief in Jesus Christ, that there's a lot of people out there who don't want to hear a word you have to say. And many of you that have just raised your hand have experienced that. You've gone through it. And that pain of rejection can be hard. But rejection is one thing that's involved in witnessing to people. Jesus even said it. John chapter 17, verse 14, he said, "I have given them your word," this is him praying, "and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world." Jesus says, that's it. They're not in the world, and because of that, the world hates them. The world hates them. So rejection can be pretty hard. And speaking of rejection, how many of you guys are American Idol fans? Anybody? Season 7 started last night. And so, of course, we had that show on, and it was the two-hour kickoff night. And probably one of my favorite nights to watch American Idol because it's all the terrible people. You know what I'm talking about? And you just kind of laugh at them. Well, you guys know Simon Cowell. He is the king of not being scared to tell people what he thinks, right? He doesn't care at all. He just wants to tell you how terrible you are. A couple lines I heard him say last night. In Britain, he said, we call that creepy. That was after one person sang. Another one, there are a bunch of absolutely hopeless people in every city. I mean, it's just useless, he said. And then here's another one. That reminds me of a nightmare I had the other night. After somebody's trying out for American Idol to fulfill their dream of singing, he said, kind of reminds me of a nightmare I had the other night. Kind of a bummer to be told that, right? A couple past quotes I read that Simon had said. If I were to score that out of a million, I'd give it a zero, he said. And then here's my favorite. Shave off your beard and wear a dress. You would be a great female impersonator. Ouch. That's some rejection right there. Well, witnessing to people can be pretty hard. Telling people about your faith, telling people about Jesus can be pretty hard. But don't give up. Don't give up. Look at what Philip went through. He was excited because Jesus had just found him, it said. In fact, interesting little side note, this is the first disciple that we read about that Jesus found him. The other ones, it's a little different how Jesus approached them, but we literally read that Jesus found Philip in verse 43, and he said, "Follow me." And so, of course, Philip was excited. And so he went to go tell his friend. Look at verse 45. Philip found Nathanael, which was his friend, and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." So he's so excited. He's like, oh man, this is so cool. This has to be the one that the prophets, the Old Testament prophets, wrote about. I got to go find somebody to tell. I got to go find Nathaniel. He goes, finds one of his best friends. He says, Nathaniel, check this out. Dude, we just found Jesus. This is the Messiah. This is the guy that we've been reading about in the Old Testament scriptures for so long. He's here. He's from Nazareth. He's the son of Joseph, that guy named Jesus. That's him. But check out Nathaniel's response, verse 46. And Nathaniel said to him, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Philip said to him, come and see. So Philip didn't give up. He told Nathaniel, come and see. So Jesus says, hey, follow me, Philip. He gets all excited. He follows Jesus. And he says, man, I got to tell somebody. Hey, Nathaniel, we just found Jesus. He's the Messiah. He's from Nazareth. And Nathaniel's like, Nazareth? Who lives there? That's a terrible town. Can anything good come from Nazareth? Come on. But Philip doesn't give up. I love it. He's persistent. He's not rude, but he's persistent. He says, hey, come and see. And he invites him to go along and experience Jesus with him. He's persistent. He doesn't give up. But you know, a lot of people give up after their first try or after a couple tries of being turned down. In fact, Reuben, you guys know Reuben. He's a perfect example of that. In fact, I'm going to invite him up here real quick to share part of his testimony. Monty, if you want to get this mic. But Reuben, it's really cool. I think you guys will enjoy what he has to say. And so Reuben's gone through a lot, and he's going to share just briefly about where God has brought him from and where he's at now.
Well, basically about 15 years ago, a friend of mine that I worked with and also went to school with for quite some time prayed for me for about 3 to 4 years. And over those 3 years, she asked me to go to church with her every single day. Not once did she fail, not by asking me. Then one day, she stopped. She gave up. And so, being the person I am, I called her up and asked her why she stopped calling me. And she basically said, I gave up on you. And I asked her, my next question to her was, I asked her, why did you give up? You know, because you won't come. So how do you know I won't come tonight? In my mind, I'm thinking I have a couple days to get out of it. But lo and behold, that night, there happened to be a service that night, which I didn't know about. And I went to church with her that night. And that night, I got saved. So that's it in a nutshell, but there's a lot more.
Very cool. Give a hand for Reuben. Yeah, so after service, you guys should ask Reuben more about that. He's got a pretty cool story. But I love that story, and I could hear it a bunch of times, about this girl who for 3 solid years prayed for Reuben and every day invited him to church. And then one day she just quit. Forget it, she said. Now, I can't even imagine. That's about 1,000 days of praying and inviting him to church. And he always came up with a reason that he couldn't come. And then one day God got a hold of him. And he ended up at church. Of course, Reuben didn't plan on ending up at church that day. But God got a hold of his heart when he was there. And isn't that cool that that girl, even though, yeah, after 3 years she gave up, she was so persistent that it made Reuben question. It made him look for whatever she had. And eventually it changed his life and, more importantly, changed his eternity. Because of that girl, because of her persistence, he's spending eternity in heaven. And I love that. And it just goes to show us that you can be persistent. You should be persistent. Don't give up, because you may come across somebody who's going to reject the message that you have to say. But don't give up. Be persistent. Don't be rude about it, but keep going. Philip wasn't scared away by his friend Nathaniel's response. And I love, too, that he goes and talks to one of his closest friends. You know, of all the people he could have chosen, he could have just chosen some random guy on the street. But no, he went and he found one of his best friends. And he began to talk to one of his best friends. And so he talks to Nathaniel. And one guy said this. This was John MacArthur. He said, I'm convinced that friendships provide the most fertile soil for evangelism. And I say that because I know many of you, probably all of you, have a friend, at least one or maybe many, who don't know Jesus. They need him. They need Jesus. Think about a person right now, a friend that you have. Don't say it out loud, but think about that person, a friend that you have that doesn't have a relationship with Jesus. They need him. And do you understand that that person, if they don't get a relationship with Jesus, they are headed to hell for eternity. Are you guys paying attention? This is big stuff. This is eternity, guys. You got to grasp how big of a deal this is. Talk to your friends. Develop that relationship. Look past the disapproval. Don't worry about what they have to say and help them experience Jesus. That's what Philip did. Number two, another thing to look past is look past the impossible. Turn a couple chapters to the right to John chapter 6. Philip is actually only mentioned in the New Testament a few times and really only talked about in detail in the book of John. Later on in the book of Acts, you'll read about a guy named Philip, but that's a totally different guy. But John chapter 6, we'll read about him there in just a moment. But first of all, you know, I brought Reuben up here and talked about him. And I brought another friend with me tonight. Would you guys like to meet him? I'd like to introduce you to him. His name's Reese. Do you guys know my friend Reese? Yeah?
I know his brother.
Who's his brother? Reese. Oh, Pieces. Yeah, Pieces. That's right. He does have a brother named Pieces. And interesting thing about Reese tonight is not only is he tasty, which I'll prove here in just... Oh, I eat my friends all the time. Not only is he tasty, but he brought a friend named... And his friend's a doctor, Pepper. So... Okay. I love food. Anybody else? I love eating. And I especially like things that are really bad for my body. Anybody else? Sugar, fattening things, you know, and those are nice and all. Maybe it's not good for my stomach, but my taste buds have never complained. I don't know about yours, right? And I love food. Well, in John chapter 6, you guys are going to see this because we have a bit of a food emergency. And if I were in this situation, I don't honestly know how I would have responded either. But you guys know this story that we're about to read as Jesus feeds the 5,000. In fact, in your Bible, your Bible may call that paragraph that, Jesus feeds the 5,000. But I think Philip probably knew this part of his life as, oh no, what the heck are we going to do? This guy was freaking out. And you guys are going to see the more analyzing, pessimistic side of Philip come out as we look at this story. Look in John chapter 6. We're going to read the first six verses. After these things, Jesus went over to the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. Then a great multitude followed him because they saw his signs, which he performed on those who were diseased. And Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat with his disciples. Now the Passover, a feast of the Jews, was near. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. This was a test. So this was a test from Jesus. This was an opportunity for Philip to see faith in Jesus be put into action. This was an incredible chance, a chance that the 11 other disciples didn't have. Jesus, for whatever reason, singled this man out, this fifth disciple, Philip. And he looked at Philip and he said this to him. "Hey, Philip, we should probably get some food. How are we going to feed all these people?" Thousands of people following Jesus and his disciples. So Jesus and the disciples, he was just hanging out with them on a mountainside. They went up on the side of the mountain and they were talking and hanging out. And then we read in verse 2 that a multitude followed them. A multitude. And this is why. It says, because they saw his signs which he performed on those who were diseased. These people were amazed at the miracles that Jesus had performed. And so they followed Jesus because of these miracles. Now, that's really important for you guys to understand that these people were following Jesus because of miracles, because people saw Jesus do these things. These miracles were not just something that took place in a random house and nobody knew about it. Oftentimes they were in public. They were in places that were seen, and people began to follow Jesus and his disciples because of that. And Jesus, as he was performing these things, almost every time was with his disciples. So they witnessed almost every miracle that these people had been there to see. And it's no wonder that these men are following Jesus very closely. They know the power. And if maybe they happened a couple times not to be there when a miracle took place. You know, being one of Jesus' 12 closest friends, that they heard about it firsthand, maybe even from Jesus himself. Can you imagine hearing about a miracle from Jesus? How incredible would that be? Hey, Philip, hey, were you there when I was healing that guy? Wasn't that cool? You know? And so Jesus is telling him, hey, do you remember when I was there and that guy was laying out on the mat and he couldn't walk? Wasn't that incredible that God has given me the power to raise that guy up and he walked away? And so I can't even imagine seeing these things, hearing these things. Here's a few of the miracles that they could have witnessed. Let me give you a quick rundown. Jesus turned the water into wine in John chapter 2. He healed a leper, a man with leprosy, Matthew chapter 8. He healed Peter's mother-in-law, Matthew chapter 8. He cast out demons, Matthew chapter 8. He shut up the wind and the waves during a storm, end of Matthew chapter 8. He healed two demon-possessed men, also in Matthew chapter 8. A man that was paralyzed could get up and walk, Matthew chapter 9. Blind man, couldn't see anything from birth, could now see, Matthew chapter 9. A man who couldn't talk could now speak, Matthew chapter 9. Miracle after miracle after miracle. And these people began to follow him. Here's what I'm getting at. Philip had no excuse whatsoever to doubt Jesus' power. Do you see it? Do you see how many times he got to witness the power of Jesus? He had no reason to doubt. Unfortunately, though, his overly cautious analytical mind comes out. And he begins to doubt. Look again at verse 5. Verse 5, Jesus asked, well, and then Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude come toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? In verse 7, here's his answer. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may eat a little. So Philip here, and I'll explain that here in just a moment. He's just missed an opportunity to see God work through his faith. Now, the correct response when Jesus said, hey, Philip, how are we going to feed all these people? The correct response, or a correct response, might have been, well, it's a good question, Jesus, but I've seen what you can do. I remember the other day when there was that guy who couldn't walk and you told him to get up and walk. I remember the other day when that guy who couldn't talk, he began talking. The guy who couldn't see, then all of a sudden he could see stuff. Jesus, I know your power. So if you want to, I could go ahead and just have people line up if you like. We could do that. You know, everybody paying attention up here, focused. And so here's the thing. He could have had a response like that. He could have had an incredible opportunity to see God work through his faith. And he could have said, well, Jesus, we have no way to do it. But if you want to, I'll go ahead and get people lining up and you can start making food. Because I'm sure you can do it. I have no idea how to do it. He could have responded that way. Unfortunately, he didn't. Now, let's be honest. By worldly standards, by human standards, there's no way this could have been done. You guys know the title of the story, Jesus Feeds the 5,000. That number 5,000, it said that there were 5,000 men in this multitude of people. 5,000 men. So in other words, they're not counting the women and the children that were there. Estimates for how big this crowd was anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people following Jesus. Can you imagine? That's like filling up the pit with people. You guys ever been to the pit, watch a Lobos game before? That's like filling up the pit with that many people. And Jesus looks up at him and says, hey, Philip, how are you going to feed all these people? They're probably getting kind of hungry. Can you imagine? You know, I went onto the APS website today just to kind of get an idea how many middle schoolers are out there. Just in APS, this doesn't even count Rio Rancho. This doesn't count any kind of private schools or anything like that. There's about 20,000 middle schoolers just going to APS schools. In all the APS schools. In other words, imagine if Jesus said to feed all of them. That's what Jesus is telling Philip to do here. Imagine if Jesus came up to you and he said, hey, I think there's some middle school kids in Albuquerque that are hungry. Would you mind doing a lunch program? Like, yeah, sure. Where do you want me to go? Well, go ahead and go to Cleveland and Desert Ridge and Eisenhower and Ernie Pyle and Garfield and Grant and Harrison and Hayes. And then when you're done there, why don't you go to Hoover, Jackson, James Monroe, Jefferson, Jimmy Carter, John Adams, Kennedy, LB Johnson, Madison. And then right after that, go ahead and take a trip over to McKinley, Polk, Roosevelt, Taft, Taylor, Truman, Van Buren, Washington, and finish it up with Wilson. And by that point, everybody, all the middle schoolers will be fed. Can you imagine? You're like, Jesus, where's the fundage coming for this, you know? I gotta have some moolah to make that happen. I don't know where this is gonna come from. This sounds impossible. That's how many people Jesus was telling Philip needed food. This is completely impossible. There's no way that this could happen. So Philip starts thinking, I can just picture this guy as he sees this huge crowd walking toward him. He's like, oh man, it's getting late. There's not a McDonald's anywhere around. I don't know how these people are going to get fed, you know? And so he starts thinking through all these things. And he says to Jesus that even 200 denarii isn't even enough to feed these people. Here's what he's saying. A denarius was the way that they got paid. This kind of like their form of money. And to work one day, a worker in the Bible times, around Jesus' time, worked a full day and he got paid one denarius. So he's saying that 200 denarii, in other words, working for 200 days straight would barely be enough to give 20,000 people a little bite. Jesus, we can't do this. This is humanly impossible, is what he says. One man would have to work for almost 7 months straight to give these people enough food just to tease them, get them a couple bites, just a little bit. For humans, this was completely impossible. But for God, nothing is impossible. You guys know that. Nothing is impossible, and Jesus proved it. Because you guys remember what happened next. One of the disciples brought up a little boy. And he said, hey, I don't know if this is going to help or not, but this kid brought a little sack lunch with him. And, you know, he has like some loaves of bread and a couple fish. But that's not going to do much for all these people. And Jesus is like, well, I'm Jesus, right? I mean, I can hook him up. And so he takes the bread and the fish. And it says he prays, and the disciples begin to pass food out. And they're passing more food out. And they're passing more and more food out. And eventually, everybody, 20,000 people have eaten so much food that they're like, oh, I can't have any more bread and fish. I'm so full, you know? And they're laid back and they're breadcrumbs all around their head. These people are stuffed full. And the disciples go around after him, and they begin picking up baskets full of food that's left over. 12 baskets, each disciple carrying around a gigantic basket of leftover food. They didn't even start with as much as filled one of those baskets. And now 20,000 people have eaten, and there's that many leftovers. Think about how incredible it would have been for Philip to say, Jesus, there's no human way for us to feed all these people. But you're God, and I know you can do it. So tell me what you want me to do, and I'll get them lined up, and you can start feeding them. Imagine how incredible that would have been for Philip. But instead, he looked at the human side of things. He looked at the things that seemed impossible. And what we need to do is look past the impossible. What are the things in your life that you think are impossible? What are the things that you think God maybe he could never do? Maybe for you, it's a family member that doesn't know Jesus. Your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, they'll never get saved, you say. They're so far off track. They'll never get saved. What could ever happen? Or you say, well, I'm always struggling with this sin. I can't imagine that I'll ever have victory over this sin. What is it that's in your life that you think is impossible? Maybe you've never even thought about it and thought, you know, I would say that's really impossible. But what is it that you're living like it's impossible for God to fix? It's time for you to understand tonight that God is bigger than all that. Look past the impossible. God is bigger than you think. Number three, here's another thing for you to look past, is look past the things that are visible. Look past the things that are visible. Turn your Bibles to John chapter 14. John chapter 14 happens right before Jesus is about to be arrested and beaten and crucified. Did you guys ever have a fear of monsters when you were growing up? Anybody? Like in your closet or under your bed? Clowns, okay? The other night, I was sleeping, sound asleep, 5:30 in the morning. All of a sudden, I heard this loud boom come from somewhere in our house. And I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but I sat up immediately in bed like, what was that? That was not a normal sound, you know? And I threw off the covers, and of course, I'm the man of the house, right? So I had to go regulate, make sure everything was all right. I was ready to, I'm walking down the hall, like, checking in doorways, and I was ready to pinata somebody's head, man. They weren't going to get away with whatever they were doing in my house. So I'm like walking down the hall, sneaking down the hall, you know, looking all tough, of course. And I get to the kitchen. All that had happened was we had a box of Special K cereal bars that decided to take a plunge off the top of the fridge. And I don't know how they fell, but they went bungee jumping without the rope and they hit the bottom of the floor and cereal bars went everywhere. And man, I thought somebody was going to die that night because I was going to kill him for being in my house, you know? I was scared. When I first heard that noise, I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out because there's fear in the unknown. In what you don't know, it's kind of scary. And let's be honest, one of the hardest parts about being a Christian is that you can't see God. Right? Would you guys say that? That's one of the hardest things, is that you feel like, you know, at least when you're talking to another human, you know if they're paying attention to you or not. But God, a lot of times when we're praying, it seems like he doesn't respond that much. And I don't know if he really hears what I say, you may think. It's challenging sometimes, not being able to see God. That's one of the hardest parts about being a Christian. And I think in John chapter 14, Philip really reveals that. Look at verse 7. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. This is Jesus speaking. And from now on, you know him and have seen him, speaking of God the Father. Verse 8. Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is sufficient for us. Jesus said to him, have I been with you so long, and yet you have not known me, Philip? Who has seen me? He who has seen me has seen the Father. So how can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father in me? The words that I speak to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does the works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father in me, or else believe me for the sake of the works themselves. Jesus had been preparing to leave. And he'd been telling his disciples that he's going to prepare a place for them. The very beginning of John chapter 14. He says, I'm leaving, but I'm going to prepare a place for you. And then he says something that many of us have heard before. He says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And in the previous 13 chapters of John, he's done miracle after miracle after miracle. He's talked about God. He's revealed the love and the truth of God the Father to these people around him. And then Philip's like, hey, you should show us the Father sometime. He asks this question. He makes this statement out of nowhere. Philip says this to him. And Jesus says, have you been following me this long and you don't know who I really am? Have you been following me this long and yet your faith is not strong enough to trust that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? That we are one, that I am God in human flesh. You don't know that about me yet? you've been following me for 3.5 years, and yet you're still not, that issue is still not clear to you? Jesus asks him these things. And I wonder how many of you are like Philip in that instance tonight. You call yourself a Christian. You followed Jesus maybe even for a few years. But you don't really get it. You don't really understand the importance behind it. And of course you would say you do. But maybe you don't really know who God is. Maybe some of you in here tonight, and I hope not, but I know there's a good possibility. You're living your life as if it's okay to continue to live in sin after you've accepted Christ. And you say, you know, it's no big deal that I'm cussing or that I'm drinking or that I'm smoking or that I'm doing this with that person or looking at this or watching that movie. No big deal. God forgives. It proves that you're just like Philip, that maybe you've been following him for a while, but you don't really know who God is. Your relationship is maybe not where it should be. And I think Philip was at a place that he was a little doubtful. He didn't fully understand what was going on. Now, we've talked about a couple instances tonight that Philip doesn't look too good in. Let me tell you this, though. This guy went on to do amazing things. And he was a strong man of God that God used powerfully to start the early church. And eventually he was one of the first ones that was martyred for his faith. Some people believe he was stoned to death, others that he was crucified. Either way, he was put to death because of his belief. And so don't get me wrong about this guy. Although he made some mistakes, many of you are in here that have done very similar things to him. You had an opportunity to step out in faith, but it seemed impossible, and you doubted God. And because of that, you missed an opportunity. Some of you, you've been following God for years, but you don't really know who he is. You're not really serving him and following him. I love this story of Moses told in Hebrews chapter 11. Of course, we went through Hebrews chapter 11 a few months ago, and we talked about the Hall of Faith. You guys may remember that. It was probably about a year ago. And we talked about all these men and women who followed God and had faith in God. And Moses was one of the ones at the very end who served God no matter what kind of suffering he had to face. So how did he do it? What was his secret? It tells us in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 27, it says that Moses endured as seeing him who is invisible. In other words, here's his secret. Although God was invisible, although he couldn't see God, he made it through the trials and the persecutions that came his way because he trusted that although God was invisible, he was still there and he was still powerful and he still was going to take him through anything he faced. He endured because he could see the invisible. He could trust that God was there, and God is there, and God cares. And so we need to look past the invisible and live obedient lives. In London, I read about a study that they did recently, the University of Sheffield. They reported facts that I happen to already know, and I'll bet all of you probably already knew as well. They took a poll of 250 kids ages 4 through 16, and they were trying to figure out how they were going to redecorate the children's ward at a hospital. So they gave them some options, and they wanted to know what was most appealing to kids. And they thought they knew exactly what it would be. Well, the survey results that I'm sure you guys all could have guessed, all 250 kids, every kid who took this survey, marked that they hated clowns. In fact, even the older ones said that they found clowns scary. Can you believe that? How many of you are scared of clowns? They're creepy, right? And here these people at the hospitals, these people at the hospitals are like, oh, well, if we're going to redecorate the hospital, we should put clowns everywhere. No wonder those kids want to get out of the hospital so quick, right? Not just because they want to feel better, because they want to get away from clown land. And so here they are reporting that we found these interesting statistics. We thought all the kids liked clowns, but obviously they're kids are enemies with clowns, you know? I mean, things aren't working out so good. For so long, adults thought they had it all figured out. Well, isn't that how it is? Sometimes trouble and fear come from the place that you least expect it. It attacks when you're not expecting. Don't be overcautious and live in fear. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. Don't go crazy, all right? Like, hey, Kevin said we don't have to be cautious. Woo, I'm going to go play in traffic. Ah! Don't do that, okay? Don't be stupid. Be cautious. That's smart. But don't be so cautious that you live in doubt and fear that I don't know if God can really do this and I don't know about this and what about that? And always wondering like I was up here with all my protective gear on and I wonder how Philip lived his life. A lot of times worrying, analyzing things. Because if you live that way, just like Philip, you can miss opportunities in your life that God wants to use your faith in him. You can change the world if you'll trust God to use you to do it. Jen's going to come up right now, and we're going to close in a few songs of worship. And I just encourage you guys tonight that God has a big plan for you. And he wants to use you really powerfully. So trust him. And know that he loves you. And don't be so scared that you're not willing to step out in faith. God wants to use you. You just have to be willing. Let's pray, and then we'll continue in worship.